Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with experienced senior living president Phil Barklow. The Denver, Colorado-based senior living operator and developer has 12 communities nationwide with 6 projects at varying stages of ongoing development. Experienced Senior Living is aggressively pushing on its development pipeline, executing on strategies to attract younger and more active residents to their communities through innovative design and applying existing resident feedback.
But the reality is we trust what the consumers are telling us this is the future of senior housing versus kind of going and trying to make a broke project work for us.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to take a moment to highlight the upcoming Senior Housing News Rebuild event that will take place November 20th and 21st in Chicago. For more information and to buy tickets, visit seniorhousingnews.com/events. Now, here's my interview with experienced senior living president Phil Barklow. Bill, thanks so much for joining us here on Transform.
Great to see you, Austin. Happy to be here.
Yeah, definitely excited to chat. I know we're looking forward to your insights at our Rebuild conference next month, which we're very much looking forward to. I think a great place to start would be just talking about Experience's development pipeline as it stands.
Sure.
With 6 new projects in the pipeline, do you want to just discuss what the year has been like from your perspective, and then we can dive into some broader development trends?
Yeah, that sounds great, Austin. Well, as you know, and again, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here and excited about Rebuild. It's one of my favorite conferences that you all do, so excited to see you all in Chicago. But as you know, development takes time, right? And so these projects that we've been working on, some of them go back, 8, 9, 10 years, of relationships that were built and master developers that have been working on these incredible sites to get them entitled for what they are. So it's been a lot of hard work. We've got an incredible team here at Experience Senior Living and Experience Senior Living Development that's been working on the design and the marketing plans and really, how the buildings flow and all the great feedback that we've gotten from our residents that we currently have and from the prospects that are looking to move into these buildings and their families and the focus groups that we've had. It's just been really exciting to think about what the future of senior living looks like from a development perspective. So, the capital markets obviously have been top of mind with everybody. The expectations have been up and down all over the place. And there were times where, to be quite frank, we thought maybe this isn't the right time for development if the capital markets can't get behind it. But we've actually found that, as we're kind of easing out of some of the challenges with the Fed's interest challenges, we are kind of positioned as one of the few people in the space that are ready to go in full grow mode with new developments.
And that's great to hear. And I think our listeners would love to know, do you want to outline just what the pipeline looks like right now? I know when we spoke at NIC, you had mentioned obviously some excitement in the DC area. Being able to get into some higher barrier to entry markets takes a long time, which doesn't happen overnight like you just spoke to. But do you want to just outline what the pipeline looks like for Experience right now as we close out the year and looking ahead to next year as well?
Sure, absolutely. So we have a multi-brand approach, and you and I have talked quite a bit about it, but for the listeners, I'll add that. So we've got a more traditional senior living approach, assisted living and memory care, around 100 to 130 units or so. We call those Sancerre. Those are normally more suburban properties, stick frame or a masonry construction, but more traditional, right down the middle of the plate. Senior living. We've got independent living, assisted living, and memory care, kind of urban adjacent brand called the Gallery Collection. Those are larger buildings, 150 to 300 or so units. And we like those, again, to be closer to urban environments for ease of, traffic for the employees, for the families, and for the residents themselves. And then we've got an urban brand, more high rise, kind of our most prestigious brand, as we call it, it's the Reserve Collection. We are doing 3 of those really in the next 90 days. So excited about expanding that brand. And we're just about to open our first one in South Denver in a town called Lone Tree. And it's just been very well received. And you and I have talked quite a bit about that brand and how we think it's differentiating the market of the kind of that upper tier of senior living. And then we have an active adult brand called Active 55. And that really focuses on kind of those age restricted multifamily apartments with very limited services, but lots of amenities. So right now, the two brands that we're focused on development are the Gallery and the Reserve Collection. So you mentioned we've got three projects in the DC metro market. More to come on those. We've announced two of them. So the Falls Church community, we think, will break ground here probably within the next 30 days. And then the one in North Bethesda, which is the Reserve at Strathmore Square, we're hoping to break ground on that in the next 3 to 4 months. So that should go well. We're going to do a gallery that'll break ground next week in South Tampa. So excited about that one as well. It's one of our larger gallery communities. And then we have another Reserve Collection going into Florida. And that's all I can announce right now. So, but yeah, it's a busy pipeline over the next 6 months, but there's been a lot of hard work in the background to make sure that we can hit these ground breaks and execute on our plans.
And you had touched on it earlier, Phil, just mentioning one, resident feedback and kind of incorporating that into design, but also being able to have your own in-house development design team. I want to talk about that for a moment.
Sure.
How is that able to help accelerate your development pace, or maybe sustain it in a way that other operators who maybe don't have in-house development when they're looking to do a new project might not be able to have access to? So do you want to just talk about that as a differentiator?
Happy to. So we're vertically integrated across the board. So we're part of NextCore Group, which is the largest healthcare developer in the United States. So there's just a lot of great insights and great team members that we have on both sides, the ESL and the NextCore side, that help us. I'd like to say we slow down to move faster, but the fact that we're vertically integrated with our ops team as well, we can get that direct feedback from our residents and prospective residents. And quite frankly, Austin, the ones that we don't get, the residents that don't move into us, the prospects that don't move into us, give us a lot of good feedback about what's missing in the market and why they are not ready to make this decision, whether it's to move to us or our competitors or stay at home. And so those are really, you know, the focus groups that I'm talking about, you know, as well as our employees. We get a lot of great feedback from our employees, not just the salespeople or the executive directors, but our frontline employees about why they work with us, why they choose to come into work every single day, and some of the things that motivate them. And we're all in the same, you know, kind of space of trying to attract and retain the top talents. And, you know, it's why we're focused on development, because, you know, some of the older communities that are out there that are available for acquisition just are not in a place location wise or in a design that would work for the newer clientele, if you were our customers, of our employees that we're trying to fight for and make sure that they're happy coming to work and they're engaged and want to grow with us. So I think that vertical integration just kind of cuts out a lot of the noise of if you have a, you know, kind of an owner over here and a developer over here and an operator over here, you get kind of the telephone game of what is actually the feedback that's happening, and everybody's driving with their own interests versus the vertical integration. We're all aligned. We're all a team. We want to figure it out. We want to get it right. And we want to move the needle forward in the industry significantly if we can.
And just going back to resident feedback, I know you and I have also spoken about the importance of being able to market senior living in a more independent, active way to, by proxy, reach younger residents and being able to reach new people that maybe haven't considered senior living as an option to them. But we know, as we know, the growth of active adult has been pretty rapid, I think, in the last few years. But just in terms of what you're hearing from current residents, how did that inform some of the things you took into some of these newer projects that are just about ready to hit the ground and get shovels moving?
Sure. Yeah, well, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously from amenity and location standpoint, we were getting a lot of feedback about the desire to be in kind of intergenerational, diverse cultures and more urban environments and walkable and independent. It was just this constant feedback of we want these amenities. We want to feel value. We want to have a sense of purpose. And that's really, you know, our company's vision is to create communities with purpose. So that's important for us when we're getting that feedback from the residents and their families that, like, hey, mom is not moving in here to, you know, go to a traditional retirement community and just go sleep in the corner. That's not what she's here for. She wants to live an active lifestyle, and she wants to be engaged, and she wants to be a part of society. That's what she's always done. And we're hearing the same thing from the prospective residents themselves. But interesting enough, you know, I always think about a couple stories that have been resurfaced lately. When we started talking about developing in the DC market, the prospective residents were reaching out to us. They heard about it. They were doing their own research. And I think that that's just what you get with the boomers is, you know, when they heard that we were thinking about building in a market that they were interested in, they were calling to make sure that we had the amenities and we had the design features that they were looking for when they knew that we were still in the process of designing. And again, I've been doing this, you know, this is my 31st year in senior housing. I'll just say that the clientele has changed quite a bit, and I'm excited about the new clientele because it's more of a partnership where, you know, you're not just building and hoping people will come. You're kind of co-designing it together and building that community and that sense of purpose together. So it's been a great process.
And were there any key elements, at least maybe to unit type or layout that Sure. you kind of evolved through feedback? Because we've heard, I think in recent years, kind of the phasing out of the studio apartment as a pretty common previous unit type. But just in terms of what you're seeing in terms of what residents are asking for in their private residences, in their units, are there any big changes that you've noticed in recent years?
Yeah, I like to say this, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but like our asset type has progressed very slowly compared to other real estate asset types. I mean, offices had to change dramatically. Multifamily has changed dramatically. You can just go down the list, and everything's kind of, you know, evolved, and seniors kind of has slowly evolved as the, you know, we went from the silent generation, the greatest generation, to now moving into the boomers. And again, I think that the boomers and some developers, I'd like to include us in that conversation, have pushed that with the design quite a bit. But the consumers are the ones that are pushing it the most. Again, the residents, their families, and the team members, their expectations are different, and their willingness to pay for it is different as well, which is great. But absolutely, from a design perspective, again, the urban environments have been something that's important, you know, next to great retail, next to great, you know, events. And that's why I'm so excited about this, the Strathmore community. It's right next to the Music Center at Strathmore Hall, and it's the second busiest concert venue in the Mid-Atlantic. It's just a wonderful location for our residents. So that was important in location choosing. You mentioned it, but larger apartments have definitely been, you know, our track record has been that those are the ones that sell out first. You know, of the deposits that we've got on these projects we haven't even broke ground on, it's always the first apartments that go. But, you know, when I started 30 years ago, I remember the first community I worked in, there was one shared restroom for 10 residents. So we've progressed a little bit. That's great. But, you know, people are still building, you know, small studios with two unrelated people in it. And pre-COVID, that was a really hard sell to people. Post-COVID, it's nearly impossible. So yeah, the feedback is important to us of what if anything would I need if I'm going to make this move? And more importantly, when am I going to make this move? And so making the move before the move is required by your physician or your family or whatever it is, your health condition. That's really what we're focused on. We know that there's, you know, 5,000 to 6,000 people turning 80 in this country every single day next year, but there's also 10,000 people turning 65. And if we can move up the funnel to try and get more of those 65, 70-year-olds that are making the decision for themselves, that's really our end goal.
Yeah, and that's great to hear. I appreciate the color there. That's all real helpful in kind of understanding just how you view experiences, track record, and also kind of where you're headed in the short term. So that's very helpful. Now for a moment, I want to take a minute to zoom out a little bit and compare this year's development climate compared to last year. Are there any major differences this year that you've noticed? It seems like Experience has been able to get creative and maintain the pipeline, but what are some of the major differences you've noticed this year as it relates to development and maintaining that pipeline compared to last year?
Yeah, I chuckle a bit, Austin, because we got our last deal done in December of last year, which was probably the most difficult time in my career to get anything done, but we got it done with some creative capital partners that we have and a lot of hard work and trust and communication. But we haven't gotten anything done yet this year. So that's been the difference. Is I haven't really seen many ground breaks at all in the industry in 2024 and 2023. There were several, but not as much as is needed or in the years past. So as I mentioned, we've got this pipeline. We think we're going to execute on four before the end of the year and then two in the first quarter of next year. So the creative capital solutions and really kind of going outside of the traditional, you know, kind of capital partners of the industry has been where we found some success. There's a lot of people that are intrigued by this industry, and there's been an education process. And normally when you go down to the folks that have done it, you know, for their whole career, you know, they know what they like and not like, and they know the operators that they like and don't like, and the locations and the markets that they think will work or not work. When you bring in folks that are outside of the industry, you know, you're basically starting from scratch. But we've got some really great, very smart real estate capital partners that are just excited about being in this business with us. So I think that's the main difference is really just both on the debt and equity side, just getting people off the sidelines and in the game and reacting to the demographics that are, you know, kind of you have to react to them. They're real.
Yeah, definitely. It feels like almost, I may be speaking out of turn here anecdotally, but it feels like the supply-demand imbalance is at one of its greatest disparities that we've seen in recent years. I know, obviously, post-COVID, but it seems like there's a really wide chasm between the rising demographic demand, obviously, which we have touched on, but yeah, also the lack of new starts, particularly to what you just mentioned, the toughness to get financing and to secure debt and all the complications that come with elevated construction costs, which I'm not sure if they've moderated or not or what you're seeing there. But just in terms of when you're thinking about this year, do you think looking ahead into 2025, is there a point at which you think there might be a turn and we might start to see more groups come back off the sidelines, whether that's private equity, whether that's institutional capital? Do you think that there's going to be a shift in 2025? What are you thinking about in terms of the development climate for next year?
Yeah, and I want to be very intentional in this. I think everyone sees the opportunity that's in front of with the supply-demand imbalance that you were talking about. And you and I have talked about this before. The vast majority of the properties that are in most markets are at least 10 years or older. So they were built and designed for a different clientele. So, you know, folks that are coming off the sidelines for, you know, from a capital perspective, both debt and equity, to get in this business, have those two options: go new development or acquire, you know, an existing community that's either stabilized or underperforming. And I think the majority of the feedback that we've gotten is most people are going that direction, whether it's because it's more creative or there's more opportunity is a good question. But again, with not that many people having a development pipeline like we have, because we've been committed to the development of the new projects, I think that's why most people are going that direction. So there's risk in everything you do in this business, right? But the reality is we trust what the consumers are telling us is the future of senior housing versus kind of going and trying to make a broke project work for us.
And Phil, you had mentioned something earlier that I want to circle back on, and that was it seems like there's a lot of creativity that it takes to be able to make financing pencil out, to make your deal actually work in a climate such as we're dealing with right now as it relates to development. Do you think that this type of creativity, thinking outside the box, if you will, in terms of what it takes to work with a capital partner to make a deal cross the finish line and get a shovel in the ground, do you think that creativity is something that's going to be sustained here in the near term in 2025 and beyond maybe? What are your thoughts there just on the creativity it seems to take to be able to make a project work?
That's a great question, Austin. And as I'm processing, I'm thinking, yeah, I hope it gets a little bit easier, but I think it's creativity might not be the right word. It's more trust, right? And so we're doing, you know, of some of the projects we're doing, we might have two or three or even four banks that are involved on the debt side. So it takes creativity to have that many people work together, agree on terms on loan docs and move forward when we also have a couple, you know, handful of people on the equity side. So I think that's been challenging. We've had some good luck with our track record to be able to raise outside capital as well, which is, again, not every group has done that. And those that have done it have usually done it fairly well. And it changes the way that they look at developments, as the return expectations might be a little bit different, or the trust, as I mentioned, is huge. But I hope it gets easier for everybody, because the reality is, we all need to push this industry forward, and there needs to be much more growth for us to keep up with the demand, especially as the needs change or the desires change for the customers. So, but you know, it, it's a it's fun to have to be so creative. It's a little stressful, obviously, but to have to be so creative to put a capital stack together for a deal these days, it's a Rubik's Cube that we enjoy doing.
Definitely. And we'll continue to keep solving it. I love those speed records that we get. Maybe soon we'll get back to that pace of new starts that can really close the gap on that supply-demand gap, which we know is really, like you had said, kind of driving either acquisitions or people to stay on the sideline. And you just touched on a point that I think is important to mention in terms of the ways that you're listening to residents. I want to hammer back that one more time because we know that obviously with the different brands that Experience has, you're able to market to different price points. And we all know the importance of that affordability component, and we also know the importance of balancing where an operator chooses to grow in, specifically, what markets are you going to choose? So when you're thinking back to how Experience identified the markets in outside of DC or in Florida and in Colorado, when you were identifying those markets, obviously you have a bit more resources in terms of data at your disposal. But in terms of when you're thinking about new markets to go to, what are some of the things you're looking for, and how do you really kind of make that call to say, yes, we're going to expand here?
Sure. We have it's a little bit of secret sauce, so I'll give you a high level version of it. But we have an in-house data analytics team, and that's really all they do. They're all much smarter than me, thank God. And they really just crunch the numbers on what's working. We've got a 45 or so different metric spreadsheet that they have on every market that we're looking at. And quite frankly, I think they've ran over, I think we just talked about this, about 1,100 deals, and we've broken ground on 16. So they're a pass much more than they are a let's move forward with it. So it really starts with that data analytics team. And then we've got our in-house vice president of market intelligence as well that spends a lot of time in these markets, understanding not just what occupancies are and what's rates, but understanding what's going on in the market and what the competitors are doing and what's working well, what's not, which drives a lot of the unit mix conversations and sometimes our fit and finish out conversations. It can drive a lot of different things, you know, for us. And then again, I think for us, what's most important is we just like to be dialed into what our consumers are thinking and what our customers are thinking. And for us, that happens with it. We do surveys. We get feedback from our residents and their families a lot. But more importantly, we're present. I'm on the road pretty much every single week in one of our communities, finding out from our residents directly from them, what do you like? What is working? What's not? Do you find value in the dollars that you spend here? And if the answer is no, why not? If the answer is yes, why? Right. Let's understand that as well. But from our residents, their families and team members, there's just a lot of trust that we've built over the last couple of years of operating these communities. And there's no ego involved in us. We want that good feedback, and we're intentional about communicating why we're asking for the feedback. We want to continue to evolve this industry and get better, both in the communities our residents live in, but the communities that we're building in the future.
And I think one of the other things when we're talking about market and we're talking about attracting younger, maybe more independent residents, residents who maybe are making not a needs-based decision, but are making a lifestyle-based decision to move into senior living, kind of that sweet spot between 55 and 65. We know that there is a lot of room there to improve, at least bringing these prospects into communities. And you had mentioned on a point earlier discussing kind of the age of the current stock that's out there of existing communities. I don't know the exact stat, but I think Nick had a data point that it was a large percentage of communities were 25 years or older, and that was something that just struck me. Right. So I know there's a lot of risk involved with development right now, but when you're thinking about kind of being competitive, maybe say 2 years down the road, you're one step ahead, it feels like, of those who might be on the sidelines right now and maybe might be too afraid to make a project on paper and to get shovels in the ground. Do you want to talk about that timing and kind of balancing the risks of kind of the less than ideal climate right now, but with the prospect of that future demand and being able to be ahead of the wave of new projects, new financing that come on board, maybe in a new cycle. So do you want to talk about walking that fine line and how that balance works?
Yeah, it's more tap dancing than walking, but yeah, there is a fine line between risk and reward. And you know, for us, we just, again, believe in the data and the demographics, and we have an incredible investment committee and founders of our company that are committed to growing this business and changing this business. So, you know, we don't ignore the capital markets. And again, the expectations have changed quite a bit. But you know, there's this conviction that we have around doing the right thing and creating better outcomes for our residents, families, and team members. And I mentioned, you know, NextCore Group is our parent company. We're the largest healthcare developer in the United States. So we're seeing it on all fronts, not just on senior housing, but in our medical outpatient business, our life science business. We're just seeing this dramatic need for, you know, new healthcare options in better locations that produce these better outcomes with our partners on the healthcare side as well. So so for us, that's really what drives us, is that commitment and just outright dedication to getting this done. So I kind of agree that we might be ahead of our competitors with that, but I also kind of think that there's just so much room in the market that there's enough room for everybody. And if we're the group that's pushing things a little bit forward, I think there are some folks that are looking at us and saying, will this work or not? Maybe it won't. Who knows? I'm committed to it because I can understand the residents' feedback, what our folks are telling us the market is needed, and then the success that we've had, you know, over the last couple of years, when many of our buildings that we've built over the last couple of years have been full and cash flowing within 12 months or less. In fact, the fastest one we have so far opened last year and was 100% occupied within 6 months and cash flowing even faster than that. So for us, it's kind of proven out with what we've seen the market respond to. When you talk about kind of the needs of those residents and what moves down that pipeline, you know, the planners versus the needs-based, I always feel like there's something of a need there. There's not many people that just wake up on a Tuesday morning and say, hey, I want to research senior living and move in today. But sometimes it's more of a social need. And I think between, you know, kind of the social needs to be around people that are like-minded, their peers, and get, yeah, I think COVID caused a lot of that as well, or was a byproduct of COVID, where people are saying, I don't want to ever go through something like that alone again. And life in a senior living community looked a lot better than life at home, either with my spouse or not. And so I think people are making that decision earlier, and we're creating these communities that have all these different social spaces. It's not just one activity room anymore or one, you know, kind of stale dining room. Everything we think about is intentional of how will humans connect with humans and create more purpose in their life. And so everything we do is with that in mind, of our residents want the larger apartments, but they're spending less and less time in them.
Definitely. And that's something I think we've reported on post-pandemic a lot of, about the transition to lifestyle-based amenities and wellness-based amenities and more of a lifestyle-driven product rather than a needs-based product. Obviously, with that safety net of that care continuum, AL, memory care, there in place, but obviously being able to reach new residents, younger residents, and to find them sooner will only benefit the industry moving forward. There was a recent NIC report that came out, I believe it was last week, that had discussed the importance of that first year of lease up and how vital that first year was in sustaining long-term operating performance into the future. So with experiences communities that have just recently opened, do you want to highlight some of the effective ways you've been able to market and really make an impact and drive, like you had mentioned, top-line performance at these newer communities, and just talk about how vital that first year is in lease up?
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I was glad to see that article, because I've been preaching it my, you know, last 20 years of my career in the development side of it. How you start a community is exactly how that community is going to maintain throughout. And I recently had the ability to go back to a community I opened over 20 years ago and took over it as a different manager and walked into the building. And some of the people that were there 20 years ago remembered me and were still in the building. And the culture that we had set apart that first year was still in place. And it was really cool to see. So, but I think it all starts with people. That's what it's all about. And we like to pre-lease as aggressively and as early as we possibly can. And that's different from the industry standard as well. And that's been an educational process for some of our capital partners to kind of get over. Like, we're just not going to open a sales trailer 3 months before we open a building and just hope that things will work out. You know, that's the old model for senior living development. It's just not our model, especially with some of these bigger communities that we're developing. You need to create the community before the building's built. So that community of people is really, really important. So we start our executive director and our director of sales as early as possible, build out a leasing center, and really show people what the real estate is going to look like, even though this isn't necessarily a real estate decision. And then we try to hire the best executive director and director of sales we can, and incentivize them and align the incentives with us to make sure that that building's full within the first 12 months. And that's why we've had the success we've had. Honestly, it has nothing to do with, you know, me or the marketing team. It's hiring the right people, aligning incentives, and really empowering them to understand the market and set up, you know, kind of blue sky what this community is going to be like and look like. And again, I think our design is world class in most of these buildings where people say, wow, this looks amazing, but who am I going to connect with? How do I get over the fear of this isn't going to be the first day of kindergarten for me all over again? I'm going to be around my peers. And you can only do that if you really create that community before the building's built.
Definitely. And Phil, just my last question here. I want to take a look ahead to 2025. What do you think are going to be some of the biggest factors that influence senior living development next year? I want to get your outlook as well on what you think the year ahead holds.
Sure. Interesting question in the headspace I'm at right now. I think the next week of the election will have a lot to do with what the future of all things in our economy look like. So we'll see what happens next week. But I really think that, again, I think the consumer is just going to continue to evolve and see and want more and more and become more educated. And that's exciting to me. I think the more educated our seniors are, their families are, and our team members are on what to expect when walking into senior housing communities, even before they come in, I think it'll continue to raise the bar for this industry. So 2025, I do expect the capital markets to continue to improve as well. So I do think that there'll be more people competing for sites around the country. And I think that that's good. I think that the industry needs to evolve. I think we need the mass developments. And I hope that, and I'm starting to see it, and I hope if anybody's watching this that they'll feel free to reach out to me, but I hope that there's more teamwork within, you know, other senior housing operators and developers to talk to each other more about what's worked and what hasn't, so that we can all learn from each other. Because again, there's plenty out there for all of us, but I think the communication is what's lacking right now. So I encourage anybody, if they ever want to talk to me, to reach out. I'm happy to share my vision for senior housing.
Well, Phil, thanks so much for joining us here on Transform.
You bet. Thanks, Austin.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.